Hello, I'm Anthony Fennell, and welcome to Future Tense on Radio National Summer. This is the second program in our summer highlight series, and when we first broadcast it back in May, it proved enormously popular. So here it is again. Now, right up front, I want to take you to a very familiar but nonetheless uncomfortable place. So let's go.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. So, let me invite to the podium our keynote speaker, Professor Rod Bland.
Well, thanks for that introduction. In the brief 2.5 hours I've been allocated for this PowerPoint presentation, I'd like to touch on the contradictions inherent in the term marsupial rodent. Can a marsupial, in fact, be a rodent? And vice versa, can a rodent be a marsupial? Well, let's start first with some definitions.
I'm sure many of us have been there, the conference from hell. Well, in fact, some people would say almost all conferences are from hell. Sure, there might be the occasional fantastic speaker, but there's often an awful lot of cereal to get through before you make it to the bacon and eggs. Now, that might be the reality for many of us, but it doesn't have to be that way, and in fact, it is changing. There is dynamic shift underway in the conferencing industry, brought on by both economic and technological issues. And this week on Future Tense, we want to tease out some of those changes and find out about emerging trends. And joining me around the Radio National Conference table are three people with a wealth of experience in conference and event management. Katie Chatfield, the creative strategist for Jack Morton Worldwide, a global experiential marketing agency. Matt Moore, the director of Innotecture and chair of the Knowledge Management Forum. And Beth Etling, the CEO of the Insight Exchange, a consultancy that focuses on helping companies improve their engagement with consumers. Katie, Matt and Beth, welcome.
Hello.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Matt Moore, as someone who's been in the conference space for a while, could I ask you firstly to give us an overview of the state of the conference industry at the moment? Because we know, like all industries, it's facing, you know, economic downturn. There are considerable cost constraints on people and on companies.
Anthony, it's a little bit stuffed, actually, to use a technical term. Now, in order to understand where the conference industry is now, you really have to look at where the music industry was maybe 5 to 10 years ago. Previous business models are coming under a lot of attack, so previous ways of doing things are no longer tenable. And there's probably attack coming from three areas. So the first one is simply money. Right? There's a slight financial problem globally that people may have noticed, and that's impacting people's ability to pay to go to conferences. And even if you have the money, you might not want to take the time to be away from your office or your colleagues because that might not look so good. The second thing is a change in technology. So all the wonderful web technologies that people have been ranting about for the last 10 years are now actually starting to work. So things like web conferencing, streaming video, all that kind of stuff. And then probably the third thing is that people are getting bored with the traditional conference format. And you're starting to see things like bar camps erupt all over the place. And also other techniques like world cafes, open space, all this kind of thing swarm in on the traditional 19th century, I'm going to stand at the front of the class and you're going to listen model.
Well, I'll just jump in there. I mean, some of those things, I mean, as I understand it, they're called unconferences. Yes. Just take us through a few of those. I mean, what do we mean by a bar camp? What is a world cafe and an open space event?
So a bar camp's really emerged in the tech community in the US. And essentially, it's like a traditional conference, except there is no agenda. There is no list of speakers. The people responsible for it get a venue. You walk in there and there are some blank bits of butcher's paper on which you can write that you want to speak for half an hour. And really, you can talk for as long as you like until people start leaving the room. So it's an unconference in terms of there is not the same structure, and it's often held together by a community. So it's a bunch of people with a shared passion, and that might be IT, it might be architecture, it might even be stamp collecting. And they come together and in effect they're talking to each other rather than being talked at. The second thing is a world cafe, which is actually being used a lot in consultation exercises. And I suppose all of these techniques, if we think of conferences as big meetings, these are different ways of having big meetings.
And with a world cafe, in effect, you've got lots of tables, you might even have coffee. And you get people to move around tables and discuss a topic. And it might be, you know, why is the sky blue? Or it might be, do we actually want to have a bypass built through our village? Mm-hmm. And then the final one, open space, is probably the most radical and works on a whole set of principles. Basically, you send out an invite and all the work is in creating a compelling invite. And a bunch of people rock up and they spend a day or 2 days or longer working without an agenda, but the question is often phrased as a challenge. So how do we do X? And rather than telling people how we do X, we ask them to work that out for themselves. And at the end of it, the hope is, because they've worked on it themselves, you won't actually have to allot tasks to people and do an action list, because people have come up with this stuff, they should own it, they should go out and do it.
Now, Katie Chatfield, you're one of the organisers behind the Interesting South Conference. What's the background behind that, and how does it differ from from other conferences, from the conferences that we're used to, traditional conferences?
Well, I'd just like to refer back to something that Matt was saying that about the conference industry and the music industry. I mean, I think where the music industry is that they forgot that what they were selling was music and not little bits of plastic. And I think that the conference industry is very similar, that what they think that they're selling is getting 1,200 people in a room as opposed to, knowledge transfer or information transfer. So Interesting South was essentially started up by a group of people who developed the Coffee Morning in Sydney, which is people who work in advertising and happen to write blogs and are just interested in ideas. And what it is that we all realised is that a lot of marketers don't actually know a lot about people. You know, that they come straight out of school or they work in very closeted corporate environments and they don't really know a lot about how varied and interesting people are outside of sort of basic media demographic breakdowns. And we wanted to explore this idea of interestingness. It really sort of came from there. You know, anyone that is, we came up with the philosophy that anyone that is interested in something is interesting. And we really wanted to create a platform for people to share and tell their stories.
And am I right in saying that with your approach, the audience or I suppose the attendees are as important as the speakers to the conference?
Well, everyone's a participant. What we really want to do is break down that divide between, a professional public speaker and someone in the audience. What we want to really do is make sure that everyone in the room is on the stage. And so it's, we collaborate beforehand. We, build a community who are interested in the concept of this conference. We ask them to co-discover with us what the speaker lineup of that conference might be. We give everybody tasks. And by the time they walk into the room, everybody has contributed. But at the same time, there is still a huge element of surprise in that nobody knows exactly what's going to happen.
Your conference, Interesting South, is a relatively small conference compared to, some of the really large conferences, really large events. And we heard from Matt there before about things like bar camps and world cafes. Are those approaches, are they applicable for large conferences, or are we really talking about small gatherings here?
Well, I think that the idea is expandable and contractable. Interesting South, we get about 400 people in a space, and the tickets sort of sell out in 3 days. So I think that's a relatively large kind of group of people. The difference between what it is that we do and I guess what on conferences do is that we are, articulating around a very, very clear idea, which is sort of this nature of interesting. And bar camps, by their very nature, are wonderfully chaotic. So I think that you use them for different things. Unconferences are really great when you have a very, very high passion and a very high interest level around a particular topic. Our sort of interesting idea is when you sort of want to explore, like when there is a huge level of surprise and discovery around a topic.
It's a terrific name, isn't it? Unconference. It really sort of captures it, I think, for anyone who has been stuck in conferences for a long time. Beth Etling, let's bring you into the conversation now. Together with Ross Dawson, you've just launched a new events company that aims to, and the quote is, change the face of executive conferences in Australia. What sort of different approach will you be bringing to the conference scene?
Well, I think Matt and Katie both touched upon a number of things in which we're looking to actually implement in the business-to-business conference scene. And that specifically, I think, is the idea of using technology to create interaction and then providing education. So those sort of three pillars are the pillars behind what we're looking to do. We talk about sort of the future of conferences and the future of events. We'll find that it's no longer about, as Matt said, sort of those talking heads, that it is about collaborating, grabbing that insight, getting the interest from those that are going to be there, from the speakers, and everybody's a participant. So the Insight Exchange is really looking to grab hold of different types of formats, different ways of engaging, and bringing it all together with niche and large audiences.
So, I mean, it sounds from the three of you as though there is a great deal of experimentation going on. Has it, in a sense, I know we've talked about new technology, but has it, in a sense, been driven by, you know, the rising costs, you know, and the poor economic situation at the moment, that people are in a sense, being forced to be more creative?
I debate that there are rising costs around conferences. I'd have to say that the amount of free collaborative tools and platforms and social networking platforms mean that the amount of organisational costs can be significantly reduced in sort of getting people collaborating around an idea and getting things happening.
I actually want to talk about money for a moment, because we're all very uncomfortable talking about money. So
let's go there.
So I'm not sure that, as Katie says, that costs have risen, but I think people's ability to pay them has decreased. There's a lot less stupid money sloshing around than there was 12 months ago.
So is it ability but also willingness to pay that money?
And I have a little anecdote here. And I can't tell you who it's about. But I thought I'd do a little experiment about a month ago. So I asked a few major international speakers how much it would cost to get them over here to Australia. And one example of a person who I think your audience will have heard of, but the average Australian may not, his agent came back and told me it would cost $100,000. And there are ways that if you're running a conference business, you can actually make that money through different ways of using that person whilst they're here. But even so, that's a lot of money, right? And going back to, I think the music thing here is key, that the example of punk rock shines out to me, right? And there was a fascinating documentary, I think on the ABC. It was Don Letts' documentary on punk. And it was about how in the 70s there was this huge groundswell of people who went, well, you know, these are musicians that have trained for a decade. It costs, you know, X, you know, $70, $80, $90 to get into one of their conferences. Mm. We don't want to do that. We don't want to play that game. We want to do the thing for ourselves. Mm. You know, you look at Barcamp, and to me, Barcamp is punk rock.
But
it's probably
there,
not the same amount of spitting, but it's punk rock.
I take your point there, but isn't there also a lure in terms of the celebrity, the big name speaker?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And if I can actually just interject here with regards to the question and money, I think that's, you know, the global financial crisis undoubtedly has definitely had an impact on the events industry. But that doesn't mean that the events industry, conferencing industry, any of it is going to go off the map and we won't have an industry anymore. So I think that by looking at the money situation, bringing out these celebrities, if you will, we have to look at different ways of doing that. You know, do we talk with speakers differently? Do we engage our audience differently? So being creative, and I guess, Anthony, going back to your original question, we have to be just as creative as any other corporation, nonprofit, any other business entity, government, anybody out there that has to sort of adapt to changing times.
Katie Chatfield, I want to talk with you about, when we've talked about new technology and the effect that
like
that's...
I'm in trouble.
No, not at all. About new technology, and particularly this idea of people blogging live from conferences and also Twittering during a conference.
Yep.
How does that fit in? Is it a distraction from the conference? Or if it's not, how do you actually blend it into the conference to make it actually a worthwhile part of the event?
Well, I've actually got quite a good anecdote. I was asked to attend AdTech in San Francisco by Again, we won't name names. a group of seven us from around the world were asked to attend, and apparently, without our knowledge, the person that asked us to attend had promised, you know, essentially column inches to the person that had essentially paid them, and they had expected us to write glowing posts. A very good friend of mine, Sean Howard, who writes Crap Hammer. His first post was that the hero of the first day of the conference was the power board, one of the biggest bugbears of people who do live blogging and twittering from conferences is, one, Wi-Fi, and two, you know, access to power their technological device. And I'd have to say there was a rain of trouble about this particular thing, and my laptop died, and so I was twittering from the conference and would have done, I don't know, about 150, 200 posts a day, and got into significant amounts of trouble over that because, you know, it wasn't seen to be value. And then you go to AdTech in Sydney, which I believe that Beth had had a lot to do with, that, you know, completely embraced the fact that people who are participating in the room and recording the session add enormous value to the conference. So I think it can be disruptive. I think it's quite difficult to manage a live feedback stream, particularly when there's a lag. If you're presenting, it can be quite distracting for people to be laughing and interacting kind of behind you, and you're not aware of what is actually going on to the room of people you are presenting to.
And sometimes it appears as though they're not actually listening, doesn't it?
Well, there is, you know, there's always a lot of different agendas going on, and a Twitter back channel is probably a lot more to do with people's agendas than it is to do with the spirit of the presenter.
Matt and Beth, do either of you have a different perspective on that?
I think this stuff is actually good, but it's like giving kids fireworks. Right? So you do it, but you actually, if you're giving people this stuff and expecting them to use it helpfully, you actually have to give people structure. And you also have to call people on things. Mm. So a particular bugbear of mine is people will tweet something, and then when it's time for verbal questions, they won't have the gall to actually stand up and ask it.
Yeah.
And I think everything that you put out in public, be it a blog or a Twitter stream, you have to be willing to say with your voice to someone.
And I think that's, and Matt hit the nail on the head with that, is if you are willing to tweet about it, then you need to be willing to be able to get up and sort of defend it, ask it, whatever it is that you're asking about. I'm a big fan of twittering at events. I think it allows a broader audience to be a part of the event that aren't there. And I think as long as it's managed correctly and the structure is in place on the event organizer's side, then I think it can be extremely successful.
And this is Future Tense on ABC Radio National and Radio Australia. I'm Anthony Fennell, and if you've just joined us, we're talking today about the future of conferencing and conferences. Our guests are Katie Chatfield, creative strategist for Jack Morton Worldwide, Matt Moore, the Director of InnoTecture and Chair of the Knowledge Management Forum, and Beth Etling, CEO of the Insight Exchange. Beth Etling, many organisations are increasingly recognising the value and importance of building and establishing online communities. I mean, how important is it for conferences to build a sense of community around the event before it's actually staged?
That's a great question, and I think it's extremely important. From all of my experience that I've had over the past 15 years or so in the event space, now more than ever, it's so important to build up a community before, during, and after an event. It's not difficult to do that with the technology that's out there nowadays. It's quite easy with Twitter and with Facebook and with sort of niche communities. It's not difficult to do, and I think if anything, it just makes the experience on the day even richer for all those attending, you know, attending and speakers alike, both.
And Matt, your perspective?
I'd agree with Beth. And I'd add that it's not just about creating new communities, because rarely, if you're dealing with an event on something that nobody has ever thought of before, you're in virgin territory, fine. But many events, tap into pre-existing communities. You know, for instance, there's several conferences on knowledge management, and some of those engage better with their community than others. And there's an extent to which you don't have to build things from scratch. You can build on the foundations that are already there, and try and make it as seamless for the participants as possible, and see as much as you can from the participants' point of view, and making it easier for them.
Historically, conferences have always been great places for networking and exchanging business cards. As we start to see conferences change in the future, as we start to see much more use of technology to bring speakers from across the world without them actually physically needing to be there, is that going to have an effect on that social interaction that was, in some ways, almost as important as the actual conference speaking itself?
Well, I think that for me is all about this wonderful term I love to call the event horizon. It's my favourite thing. I was the first one to get it in. Yay! And the thing is that I think that people and professionals are very used to exploring the professional relationship in an online environment before they actually meet up. I think that what technology allows you to do is, instead of getting, 1,600, 2,000 people in a room once for one day, you can, skip stones across it. You can create sort of ripples and touch more lightly and have engagements more often, but in a shorter kind of context. And that's where technology is great for being able to deliver those fantastic rock star speakers. And then what it is that you use in the real space is facilitating that networking and doing world cafes and doing collaboration around the ideas and around the inspiration of those kinds of speakers.
Can I just go back to the music metaphor yet again? Because I think it's really, really, really important, right? Mm. So we talk about rock stars. I actually think we need more speakers who are like DJs.
Mm.
Right, and the DJ creates an environment in which people have fun, in which people are engaged. And I think we need more superstar DJs on the conference scene than rock stars.
Nice.
And actually, Matt, that's not a bad point. The DJs really should be those event organizers out there, because since they're the ones sort of pulling it all together.
I see them more as the promoters than the DJs, though.
Okay.
Now, Beth Etling, can you go too far in terms of trying to be innovative? And I'm thinking perhaps of some conferences I've seen and heard about where, holograms have been used or simulated holograms have been used. I mean, do we get to a point where, trying to be different, you end up actually decreasing the value of the actual event?
That's an interesting question. Straight away, my first knee-jerk reaction is to say no. I think that we're... And the reason why I say that is we come back to my favorite sort of concept is that the world is changing the way that it's communicating. Its behaviors in its communication learning styles is all changing because of technology that's out there. So trying new things and testing them, I think, needs to happen more often. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And that's okay, but learn from that experience to do something else. We wouldn't have seen a Twitter back channel be used at an event, I would say even almost about a year and a half ago. But now it's almost like, well, where's the Twitter back channel? People are looking for it. Living Networks is sort of another example where, that was tested back in the States probably a good 3 or 4 years ago, and it never really sort of took off. But now it's starting to really gain some traction because we have the masses are now starting to gain a new level of communication via technology, and their behavior of the way that they gather information, learn, and network is completely changing.
Matt Moore, let's bring us back to brass tacks, back to money, which you mentioned at the beginning of the program.
My favorite topic, Anthony.
One of mine too, I can tell you. One of the ideas you've been looking at is the possibility of using crowdsourcing techniques, as I understand it, to raise money to bring out international speakers. What can you tell us about that?
So that's still in its very early stages. We're talking about things that haven't worked yet, right? And I suggested this to a few international speakers, and most of them said, no, show us the money, which is a fair enough response because people have got to eat.
Just to be clear for people who aren't familiar with the notion of crowdsourcing, most people would be, but just give us an idea of how that would work, what the actual notion is.
If you buy a ticket to a conference or a gig, you are paying a small part. You are paying a small part towards the sum total of the costs and the profit for that event. Rather than paying that after the announcement of the schedule in the event, you actually pay before. So in effect, you become an equity owner in the event. So you are, in effect, buying part of the event before it happens. You're also involved in the planning behind it, too. And in effect, it's trying to look at different ways of funding people to come out here. So rather than take a pure buy-sell approach, could you take a venture capital approach to this? Could you take a microfinance approach to this? What are the other ways of doing this financially?
OK, finally to you all, it's crystal ball time. This is Future Tense after all. Could I ask you each to give us a prediction for how conferences are going to look into the future over the next few years? How are they going to change? First, perhaps to Matt.
I think it's going to be a creeping change. So I could say that we're all going to have jetpacks in 2020 when we attend our conferences. But it's the interesting thing about Twitter is that it's something, even like ICQ, so online chat has been around for a decade, and suddenly the ability of people to handle it and the technology tweaks just a bit and it's there, right? So if you want to see the future, look around you now.
And Beth Etling?
The big prediction is to see different formats out there. No longer, hopefully, will we see those talking heads that are up there, and you know, the inside exchange. And the way that we look at it is about taking technology, creating interaction, and providing education. So having, again, those three pillar points will change the way conferences are pulled together, the way that they're actually executed, as well as the follow-up afterwards. So I think really we're talking about a change of formats of the future of conferences versus where the industry is going.
And Katie Chatfield, the last word to you.
Storytelling will become just a lot better. Death by PowerPoint will die. Hooray. And that separation between the audience and between a speaker will hopefully dissolve, and everyone will get a lot more value out of conferencing.
Well, Katie, Matt and Beth, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a fascinating discussion.
Thank you, Anthony.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And you've been listening to the thoughts of Matt Moore, the Director of Innotecture and the Chair of the Knowledge Management Forum, Beth Etling, the CEO of the Insight Exchange, and Katie Chatfield, the creative strategist for Jack Morton Worldwide.